The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to The Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Paddy, Pete, Steve. You're all right, lads.
Hello.
Yeah. The Weekend Hello, Collective, lads. Bring it in the house. Yeah, send it up, knock it down. Yeah. All right. Yeah. One question to understand is this the reduction now down to level 3, DEFCON 3. Gone from DEFCON 4 to DEFCON 3. But we got like 1,000 odd infections a day happening in the UK still. There's still like triple digit people dying, and yet we're bringing it down to relaxing. And yet in Beijing, they got what, 30 infections? You can never trust the Chinese, of course, with numbers. They're very good at numbers, but they're very good at massaging numbers as well. But they're locking down the biggest city, one of the biggest cities, a mega city, and they've got 30 infections. I don't understand what our thoughts and their thoughts. We haven't got it right from the start. It seems like we're messing it up at the end as well. It's like all the way through, the government have been consistent, haven't they, in messing it up all the way through. So does anyone understand why they're bringing it down to 3?
No, not really.
The fancy haircut?
I think Boris quite likes his hair, doesn't he? Yeah. A bit messy and a bit windswept and interesting. You know, I haven't got time for my hair. Do you know what always astounds me? Professors, right? Very intelligent people, generally, professors. But even they adhere to the stereotype of a professor. You see the odd professor and you with wild hair, a dicky bow tie, and you're thinking, get over it. Surely your intelligence and your title should speak for itself. You don't need to look wacky and eccentric like Albert Einstein. That's how that's the ego, isn't it, in people, I suppose? It's the ego. Like Boris's ego. Is that everything wrong? Didn't we say, a few weeks back, we talked about the app, you know, contact tracing app. And I said, why does the government think they can do it better than Apple and Google? You know, the biggest companies in the world, they've grown because they're good at tech. Everyone's adopted their tech, pretty much, and they've earned lots of money doing it. You know, Google's got more cash than small countries. It's like phenomenal. Oh, and Apple, I mean. Apple's got more cash than small countries. And yet, you know, at the start, the government said, no, we'll do our own. We got a little department here. We can sort it out. They did all that thing, fanfare, on the Isle of Wight. Yes, sounds like a good idea. And then all of a sudden, right, we're going with Google and Apple. And now someone's saying that Apple haven't even been told that they're going back with the Google and Apple. So it's just a shambles. It's come from Boris, isn't it? Boris, we know. When you've got a man who's at the centre of the government, who we don't know, we've got so little clarity and transparency on him, we don't even know how many kids he has, that then pervades, I think, through the whole government. You know, when you've got someone who won't tell the truth even on his kids and their existence, that is not a good sign, is it? Really, to start off with, you know? You need a stand-up man. The trouble is, you need a boring spreadsheet man, really. But they can't be leaders, can they? But it's just a shambles, isn't it? And I just think even Corbyn would give him a run for the money now.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
That's a big step.
Yeah.
I think you're
right. At least he might have listened to some experts and have gone with some intelligent people around him.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we... I didn't want Corbyn because they crashed the economy, but the economy's crashed now anyway. So it doesn't matter. It's happened.
You say that a spreadsheet guy couldn't be a leader, but I think Rishi Sunak, give it to Rishi till the end of the season.
I'd vote
the whole Rishi. Government, he's the only one that's come out of it with any kind of credibility in my eyes. And he probably could lead the whole thing, I would think. But
doesn't
work like that necessarily, does it?
Really? He looks very young though, doesn't he?
That's good though, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think it's not a bad thing, but it's just...
Well, Steve's the youngest. How ageist, Steve is.
No. And also, it's a bad thing, but do you not find it sometimes quite odd because you've got like these old... Because you're used to seeing the old people coming out and telling you things. You've got someone looking fairly young. You're like, this is quite refreshing. It's like the New Zealand Prime Minister. I always find it's... Like when she comes out, you're like, she's my age, and it's just like bonkers, isn't it?
Yeah. Makes you feel a bit of an underachiever, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's got a lot of teeth in her mouth, isn't she? Jacinda,
she has
a lot of teeth there, and I find it quite nice though. Like I do quite like it, you? And she's quite,
teeth?
No, she seems quite a bit normal, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas
walk the sexism line. Don't women make far better leaders? I mean, the world leaders that are...
Thatcher. Current
world leaders that are great. You know, Merkel is fantastic.
Thatcher.
Thatcher was
Thatcher. Thatcher, yeah. Merkel, exactly. She's done very well there, and she and Jacinda was three. I suppose that's all we got examples. But yeah, no, I think generally women are generally more efficient in most stuff. You know, I'm always surprised that they aren't going to pick in stocks and shares though. They're rubbish there.
No,
do you know what I've noticed there? There's not many women on Twitter that are doing so. They can't. Though. It's like you know, some of them are okayish. No, saying that that's not fair because that is not a fair representation. I don't know. You know, I know a couple.
No, it really is not. Really isn't.
I know a couple of ladies.
A lot of these guys on Twitter with the weird names and the strange photos could be anyone, though, couldn't
they?
Yeah,
yeah,
it's very hard to tell who these people ramping up C4XD are.
To be fair, I know a couple of ladies on Twitter that trade. They seem to do okay. They seem to do quite well. So I mean, as a representative of their sex, which I haven't got much of a representative. You know, I know a lot of guys doing really badly. So You know, I know loads of guys doing badly, and a couple of ladies doing quite well. So I think, all in all, maybe they are better than men. Who knows?
Yeah, but, I think like the less testosterone involved in this is probably sensible.
I think women are definitely more risk averse. You know, I mean, guys will chuck it all in and go all in and go nuts. You know, they either do well big time or they'll bust or they'll blow up their account.
Yeah.
And so I think women, to a certain extent, that's the same with kind of driving, isn't it? Men, they use a car, they get so used to a car. Men are rallying a car, driving it hard, showing off a little bit. When you're young, women don't see it that. They see it as a vehicle generally to get from A to B. Men, extension of their ego, isn't it? You know, and in fact, men get too comfortable in the car, where women never get blasé with it. The safety and the health, they always take us. You know, so yeah. But so you could say though, the best drivers at the top end are probably men. But you know, but listen,
I was purely making the point that
Peter, you're with me on this. You were being sexist as well. Now you started it. But what I'm saying is, if you want to ensure a man or woman, you'd always go for the women. But you say, who's the best drivers? And you say, well, men. No, they have more crashes though, so you can't say that. So it's a definition.
Are you talking about motorsport? Are you saying that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're saying.
Driving, driving, parking. They can't park.
I can't park. To be honest, I can't park. My parallel parking peaked in when I was 20, and it's gone downhill ever since.
Yeah, I'll put you up to it now as well. Actually.
Bringing the robots to do the parking—that's what I say.
Oh, mate.
Bring the robots and do everything. Yeah, everything. But the problem with humans is that we you know, if you look at anything, any mistake we've ever made generally because you got over-emotional. People on Twitter get nasty. If I'm talking about stocks, for example, I'm not that favourable about it, or I'm not as bullish as them, they'll say I'm de-ramping it or something. I know straight away that person's overexposed and they're probably in at the wrong price. I know straight away. You know, you don't get nasty and personal about a stock unless you're overexposed, you know, unless you're underwater it generally. If you are, you know, have a little bit of money in there and it's doing quite well, you don't worry about people criticising it, the money so much, you know. If your portfolio is balanced and diversified, it doesn't matter. It's when you are literally got the farm on it and people are slagging off on Twitter, you can't take it because it's your livelihood, you know, it's your farm, it's your house, everything. So I talk about that. Paddy today.
So let's talk about Valerian.
Talking about that, Paddy's talking about overexposure, and he's overexposed a little bit. Well, you're not really. We put these rules in 10%. That's quite a sensible rule, right? And you are what? What percentage are you in Valerian?
24%.
Yeah. Well, it's a big chunk, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It's a decent chunk. But of all the things I've invested in, it's probably the one that actually has a business, which is helpful. And it's not as a result of me putting too much money in. It's just because I sold everything else. And the other stocks I had at the time just happened to be sort of 2-3% jobs.
The only problem with Polaris is this, right? We got in too early. My rule now is if you're getting a loss maker or pre-revenue stock, you want a timeline, that milestone of 12 months, run a maximum, where they are start generating cash revenue. Now, Polaris are generating revenue, but it's only tests. It's not clinical. It's their machines are out there for research purposes because they've only just passed phase 3. And now they need FDA approval. That's the next big milestone. FDA approval. They're submitting that on Q3 to actually commercialise those machines properly. And, you know, that's when they start earning big bucks. I was in it a little bit early because essentially we should have got in roundabout, I'd say, Well, yeah, right about when they submit Q3 this year, probably, and there's a year till they start really getting the agreement from FDA and they start generating revenue. But, listen, I think... Listen, if people don't know the story of Plarium, I genuinely think it's one of the brightest prospects around there at the moment. It's just, it's got its own... There's no competition for it. It can show pulmonary function in 3D colour. You know, it's 100,000 times better at image quality than any other competitor out there. And the competitors, by the way, are radioactive. They're not good for you. And so, you know, you can't have too many of those. This is not, it's MRI, it's magnetic scanning, so it's not that bad for you at all. And if you look at the background on this, like, Dr. Jonathan Alice is now the chairman. He was on the board a while. He helped spin this out into a separate, because it was with GE. GE is one of the biggest companies in the world. It's GE Tech. They didn't do anything with it. They've got lots of things going on. So Jonathan Alice and I can't think of the founder's name of the Plarium. I'll call him Dreyfus. It's not that. But they spun it out. Dr. Jonathan Alice.
Anthea Butler.
Yeah. Dr. Jonathan Alice, the one with, what's his name? The Blue, he sold his company, basically. But he spun two companies out from GE. Dr. Jonathan Alice, who's now the chairman of Plarium, went with one, but he's on the board of Plarium as well. Anyway, he sold his bit of tech, for $450 million, right? And that was to Bracco, Italian healthcare company, quite a big company called Bracco. You can look them up, they're a very big company. Now, in the last fundraise, just before last fundraise, Dr. Jonathan Ellis became chairman of Plarium. Mm. Who comes on the shareholder register as a fundraiser? Bracco. And so they're thinking, oh, hang on. And I talked to Richard Hullahan Friday, and he said, basically, that this is more potential in this one than there was with Dr. Jonathan Alice's one. And Dr. Jonathan Alice knows this, otherwise he wouldn't be chairman. But he says they're already looking or chatting to companies who want an early start. And I wouldn't be surprised if something happens before... they can submit this in FDA submission in Q3, but I wouldn't be surprised if something happens, some kind of partnership, some kind of buyout happens, you know, before it gets to FDA approval. Because once it gets to FDA approval, of course... It can rake in the money, so I wouldn't be surprised.
And then what happens with the shares if that happens?
Well, there'll be an offer for the shares, and so like I said, it'll have to be a good offer because Dr. Jonathan Alice, you know, I mean, at the moment, you know, like I said, if they offer 450 million, for example, let's say they offer 400, what's that? It was dollars to pounds here at the moment. So,
one to one, pretty much the same.
Dollars to pounds, is it? Let's look. So
live currency
400. So 323 million. That would be. That's pretty much a nine bagger, you know, from here.
There we are. Yeah.
So
let's do that. How do we make that happen? Can you email him?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not. Listen, have you heard Richard Hullahan? He's a very conservative guy. He's a very sensible guy. And often I wish he'd be a bit more rampy, you know. Because he's got like over underground it himself. He's got I don't know what he puts every fundraiser. Richard Hullahan, CEO of Fairplay, put money in. He's on a wage, of course, but he's chucked money in and he's put like he got 100 grand in there or something. You know, so he got a good chunk of skin in the game. And I did say afterwards, I was a bit I wanted him to get after the podcast. I just said, Richard, this is a multi-bagger, isn't it? And rather than sort of say yes, I didn't even say yes because he's a bit more conservative than that. He just said...
said yes?
Yes.
He said... Yes, but no.
Yeah, he said, I don't see how it couldn't be. So I thought, right, okay. So I don't know.
Politician's answer.
Fair enough. But no, but that's as firm a commitment as you can. They're all piling money into it. And this is, you know, this company Bracco, they're all in imaging. These guys all know about imaging. This is their world. And that company just bought out Dr. Jonathan. Now, if they weren't happy with that company, that purchase, they wouldn't follow him into this one, would they? That big company, Bracco. So it's just working out.
We're coming into a period where it's probably going to be a good time to buy British companies as well, aren't we?
Yeah, and do you know what? It's almost... and Bracco. What I said to you, Pat, is like, if you hold on and have patience, it'll do very, very well. But there will be volatility, you know? Like when
let's just make sure in 3 months' time you're not shouting at me about deadheading.
No, this is what...
Just put this in stone right now, what you said.
How long have I held, this for? I said it's one of the stocks that has a clear path to 10 bagger. You know, you can see it.
You were saying this about C4XD as well.
No, I didn't have a clear path to it at all. I didn't know.
Just on Polaria, it's actually an American company, isn't it?
Well, yes, but it's listed here.
It's listed here, yeah.
Listed here. But so, yeah. But and going back to Paddy's point about overexposure, it's a good point in terms of it's not something he's not gone mental and like invested low. It's that he's reduced his other holdings and converted to cash, and that this is the one stock which has risen. And so he's now overexposed to an extent, but when you're listening to the story and you're kind of going, yeah, hold on, really. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if an unforeseen event happened and we saw a drop in price, you know, this quarter of his portfolio is going to be affected.
Then you double down.
The
most success I've had in investing, so I've been investing, is when I've gone big on one stock. And
that's really changed the tune from a few weeks ago.
I know, but hang on a second. So you got to look at the risks, right? And I don't mean that on any old stock. I did it on, you know, Lloyd's during the last financial crash. So it was at rock bottom. And of course, it went down a bit further. But generally, we knew over the next coming few years, it was going to go up because it held 2/3 of the mortgage market in the UK. The government could not just buy it or liquidate it or whatever. They took shares in it. And so it was a measured risk, you know. And now, if you look at the risk on Polarian and all that stuff, and then I think, well, you know, it's going to be a bit volatile because when they come up with financial results, they're going to make a loss, and people see the loss. Of course, they make a loss because it's not commercial yet. They've got to get FDA approval for that. So, but the biggest risk is FDA turn them down. Now, I can't see that happening. This is by far the best product in the market. Anyway, it's had clinical phase 3, you know, but it's gone through all that. They've got the best guys in the industry holding shares in it, pretty much. So I don't see what the risk is here.
There's no, like, what reason would the FDA turn down a technology that's based on MRI? Like,
One more thing. And did you hear Richard as well? There's a chance that FDA will expedite, not turn it down, but expedite this because they've been doing that with anything COVID related. And like I said, right now, they don't have, the tech isn't out there to actually measure what damage COVID's done to people's lungs. This is the tech. So it's about as good a chance to get expedite this, and you know, BRCA could buy out straight away. So you know, I just think knowing the risks. And Warren Buffett said diversification is for the ignorant. It's for people who don't really know a lot about a stock, And I think completely all your money into one stock when the share price has risen massively, like some of these COVID stocks, which I see a lot of people ramping on Twitter, and putting your money into those when they've risen by 400%. That's silly, yeah. But when you're at the bottom here, near sort of, this hasn't peaked anyway. This is a 40 million market cap company, and it's got a chance to be a 10 bag. I think, it's just weighing up the risk. All risks aren't the same, just weighing up the risk, you know?
Okay.
It's funded.
I'll spin that round and say, absolutely. So if that's the case, why aren't we putting 100% of our portfolio into it?
Because there's always some risk.
Right, so being 25%, you're overexposed to an extent, aren't you?
But exactly. No, but the thing is, if you look at the risk of small cap companies, right? First of all, is it a proven business model? Pretty much, it is. We know that the guys in it, we know they've done it all before, and so they wouldn't be putting their money into it anyway. I assume they know more than me. It's gone through all phase three trials, clinical phase 1, 2, 3, which is the most risky. FDA is now just approval. They need this on the market, right? So they funded, which is also a big thing. The share price hasn't risen massively, which is also a big risk. So if you look at it, this is why I say investing and gambling are different. First of all, you put your money on a horse, you lose it, you lose the money if it doesn't win. With this, it doesn't. The biggest risk coming out is the FDA approval. Now, I just think I'm probably talking inside of my neck here. Largely, this is an admin thing. It's obviously you can't get approval straight away. FDA get a lot of applications for stuff to get commercialized. So it's in the queue. But I think once it comes to the front of the queue, it's a no-brainer, really. I'd say no-brainer. People say no-brainer, normally you've got no-brain.
Right, exactly.
But I think nothing in an investment is no-brainer. But what I'm saying is the risk is very low, I think, for this kind of stock. And I think
what's a sensible exposure level then in your portfolio for such a great stock like this? You know, surefire winner.
Well, no, I'm going to listen. I'm at the advantage here. I've bought a few more on dips. The last few weeks, I've had my exposure. I was only over 2%. I knew it's a long time. We've got 12 months yet. 12 months, unless something happens before. Now we could see expedited. They speeded up the process, the FDA, because it's needed. Yep. And you could see a buyout before that. So you never know. Sometimes you always get things that happen that you don't see happen. But I'm assuming I can scale in more. So I'm happy to go in over 10% of this. Yeah, because I know once it gets closer to that FDA approval date, and they'll pass it, it'll fly. It'll just fly, you know. And
So Paddy was talking this week about averaging down, because he's actually a little bit under now, or kind of breaking even on this one, but there's a potential there. He's already at 23% exposure, though. So what's the best tactic here? You know?
Well, I said the chart, if you look at the chart, it's very much the same. Do you remember Greg's when the RSI, the momentum's coming off a little bit? That's what's happening now, and generally the RSI is dipping below 50. When that happens, the stock is weak and it'll go a bit lower normally. And it did. I it went a bit lower, and so I'd wait until that bottoms out a little bit. Let's look at the chart here. But if you want, I wouldn't. 20-odd% is quite a high chunk at the moment. But you'll see it coming around. And I've done it before where I've scaled and I've been a bit overexposed, but I've averaged down. Then it's bounced, and I've taken a bit off, and it's feel more comfortable. But but let's look, we'll be on the, let's look at the chart. Right, let's head over to the charts. Yeah, if you look, it's generally rising. It comes up and down, up and down. I'd say, wait till the RSI. Did it end up on thing? It started off down. Oh, no, it started off down.
It ended level Friday.
Okay.
So Paddy,
people must listen to the podcast, mustn't they? That podcast was very good. Richard Holland gave loads of information on that.
Yeah. No, I haven't listened to it yet.
No, worth listening to. He's very dry. He's very serious. He's a lovely guy. Richard is a lovely guy. But he's a sensible CEO, you know. He's almost like he comes from almost accounting background, almost quite alike. But he's got a big chunk of money in this. Yeah.
No, so, Paddy, you're, because you're kind of breaking even, or it hasn't risen for you, so it's basically your portfolio, other stocks have fallen away, and so this is now...
Yeah, exactly. This is one that just, like, it didn't really drop. So it's like, monetary, it's at the value that I tend to sort of, like, buy my first sort of chunks in. So it's just stayed the same, whereas everything else has gone through the floor.
Yeah, so that, in which case, it is that thing of exposure. It's sort of, you're not more exposed than you would be normally in terms of, from a monetary value, but from a percentage of portfolio value, you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so if you had this pad, for example, the biggest risk at the moment is this, right? They've got funds, there's not a risk. The share price is in, that's not a risk. The path to commercialization is there within 12 months maximum, maybe a bit more than that, say, say about 18 months. So you're going to have ups and downs, but the story will build, you know, so things will happen. And so we may be seeing near lows here. We don't know. Now, if you had this kind of level of exposure in an oil and gas exploration stock, then I'd be worried. I'd say, no, listen, the chances of you losing that are very high, because, you know, there's a 5-to-1, 10-to-1 chance of wildcat drill of it coming in, probably 10-to-1 wildcat drill if it's high impact. So I'd say, dummies are silly. If I were you, I'd put 1% of your portfolio in that, or even 2%, because it's just a gamble. It's a 10-to-1 gamble on a horse. If this is also clinical trials on a drug, not a drug device, which this is, that's why this was also a bit safer. It's a device. They had to go through a clinical trials because there's a drug involved. That drug is not the thing that's being tested on humans. You know, it's just part of the device, and that's xenon, which is a stable gas, which is not a problem. But if you were in clinical trials for a drug or a vaccine, you're at clinical trial one and you're at 23%, I'd worry. Because it's something like... It's ridiculous. Anyway, 5%. I think it's within oncology and cancer, it's worse than that. But it's below 10% of that gets from, you know, again, 10-to-1 chance, getting from phase one to commercialization. So then, but this now, we've gone through all that. All this FDA approval. And like I said, there's all the board have big chunk of skin in the game, you know, and they've all done it before. So,
And I didn't want to bring in the COVID thing because that's very rampy. But I was talking to a friend of mine who works with a chiropractor, a doctor who does scans all day, every day. And he was saying how the effectiveness of the scan of the lungs should be being used far more, because you can see in an instant whether you've got got the virus in the lungs. And so... far better than it, and far more accurate than all these tests that are flying around. It's actually just get people scanned, and you can actually see if they've got the virus. I don't know the practicality of that, of how possible that is, but you kind of go, and the relationship with Polarium, but yeah, you sort of go, you've got a technology that could help.
Who's rustling their mic? Is it Steve? Is it you?
Not me, no.
Someone is rustling around there.
Not me.
No, I think it's a big player. As I said, you know, this COVID thing, is you realise... That you know, people, you know, it's obvious, I suppose, but when they needed all these this breathing apparatus, it's their lungs, you know, they're knocking them out, and then it's damaging their lungs, and so you realise, as a human, you can't function without lungs. It's quite an important thing, but yet the tech on scanning and lung function is not as good as other parts of the body. You can get tech in other parts, so it's really odd. So it's, so by the way, Richard Hallahan has, just checking out how much he has £732,000 of stock. That's the CEO, and it's only 1%, but he's going into every round. Jonathan Alice has around about the same, and the owner or the funder, his name is Bastian Druis. So he's the owner there, which I quite like. He owns 12% of the company. That's 12 million. What's that times 25 pence? Yes, that's he owns 3 million quid's worth of stock.
They're
all gone. They're all imaging guys. You know, they're not. They're experts in their field. They know what they're on about more than we do. So I think,
they've actually stumped up cash to.
So I'm starting to think. I've been trying to construct this portfolio recently, a balanced portfolio in 9 stocks and a fund for people who are new to it. And I'm thinking, I don't need that. I don't need it. I really enjoy small cap stocks more than big cap stocks. And I'm not convinced by the trends.
Wait! What? You're going back on all that?
I think if you're new, if you're new,
you change your strategy more often than I change mine.
But listen, I think if you're new or you're part time and you don't do it like full time, then you need that kind of structure, right? I do, and to a certain extent, I still need structure, and I still will stay within sort of 10% when I can. But if I see an opportunity, sometimes you just got to go for it. And at the moment, I'm sitting, I've still got 60% cash, pretty much, but I'm waiting around, and I'm just going to scale in, and I'm going to go biggish on a couple of opportunities, because all you need is one a year, pretty much. If the risk-reward is right, then you cracked it. I mean, but you've got to make sure the risk-reward is right, and you've got to make sure you do your own research, and lots of research, and understand the product, you know, and think, okay, and weigh it up. And even if you need to, put a stop loss in, all that stuff. But I mean, I think sometimes, you know, when it's right, when you've got the right one, it's like, that's why I tweeted out that thing to him. It's from, oddly, The Gambler, isn't it? Kenny Rogers. And I was talking, this is a good one, I was talking to Colin Bird, right? A lot of people are not a fan of Colin.
Sorry, what? Kenny Rogers thing?
Kenny Rogers, you know, you've got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You've got to know when to walk away, know when to run. And that's it. Never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time and no account for counting when the dealing's done. But that's from The Gambler.
Well, I didn't know you were going to sing. I wouldn't have asked. Right,
but
okay.
You've got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. And I was talking to Colin Bird, right, who's he's with Bazant, he's with Galileo, he's with Extract Resources. And not a lot of people like Colin, because he'll do a fundraise, a discount, but, you know, he's got these little mining companies going on, exploration companies going on. But he made his name basically in 2009, right? Because he was doing the same he was doing now. He's looking at Zambia and all that, looking at these little exploration companies. And he told me in the podcast, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but we weren't recording. And I was just talking to him. I said, tell me about that deal you did. And I said, back in 2009. He said, yeah. So he had this little company, he put 100 grand of his own money into it. It was worth a couple of million. That's all it was. It was a copper play, I think. It was in Zambia. And he said he sent a letter to every CEO, every chief of operating mining companies around the world, pretty much, saying, have a look at this little company. I think this could be worth a lot. It's got a lot of exploration potential here. Copper's strikes are very long, all this stuff. He got ignored by everyone. Next thing you know, he had a call from, I think, First Quantum, it was, Metals. He flew to London, because he was based in South Africa. He flew to London in an evening, and they made him an offer. And the offer then was half what he wanted. He said, I knew I had something special here. And he said to me, it's like that song, you've got to know when to hold them, when to fold them, you know? And that's right. And he said, they offered me this price, and I said no. And so they offered me half stock, and the price was $260 million. And he said, yeah.
I wouldn't get out of bed for that.
I know. And he said, so, you know, and he said, okay, fair enough. Well, the deal right there, he said, it took 10 minutes. He said, it took 10 minutes. But he said, if I could have accepted 130, pretty much, they offered me 50% of that, and I had said no, because I knew it was worth more. I knew they wanted it. But he said, you know, The Gambler. But then he said, literally, I got back to South Africa the next 2 days. I was in my office just sorting out the paperwork, and I came out of the office, and there was literally 8 o'clock in the evening, so no one was around, and the car park was empty apart from my car and another car. He got out, and he saw this other car, like 20 yards away from his, black car with blacked-out windows. And he thought, oh, no. Oh, I said, I've just hit the jackpot. I'm going to die. Someone's going to shoot me within 2 days of actually hitting the jackpot. He started panicking. He started kind of breathing heavy. My heart started beating. The guy got the car. Mr. Colin Bird? Yes, how can I help you? And it was from another big mining company, this guy. He said, you've just done a deal with First Quantum. He said, how do you know? He said, we know. He said, over that. He said, we're willing to offer you 30% more than that on that deal. And he said, okay, how long will it take? He said, to do it. He said, and this company said, well, the fastest deal we've ever done has been 6 weeks. He said, oh, okay. Let me have a think about it. And he said, no, I'm not going to wait 6 weeks because it could call off. He said, I'll take the money there and then. He said, there, isn't it? It's like, why wait for an extra 30% when 260 million? It didn't all go to him. I think he owned about 40% of that. But I mean, you know, he only put 100 grand, the return on that, 100 grand. And, you know, what, and he made probably 10 million from it.
Mm. Yeah, I've had worse days.
Yeah. But I think sometimes what I've been doing, and I go back to saying I've been looking, messing around with bigger stocks, BT, looking at 30%, 20%. And then, you know, I don't want that. I don't want that. I can research small cap stocks, and I can get, you know, multiples of that. And if I do it properly, and that's all about discipline. And, like, you know, Warren Buffett says, though, it's ignorance, really. Diversification is ignorance, because it's for people who are not doing enough research and say, buy lots of stocks. You may as well just buy a fund. And I've got a fund in the background, so I don't need the big stocks. But if I see opportunity there, they're all on my alerts. If I see opportunity there, I maybe go for it. But I mean, generally, I get excited by one story stocks. Like, you look at BT, I was talking to Paul on the week, Paul Hill. It's got, you know, several different stories going on. It's got the debt, the pension issue, it is open reach spin out, the regulatory, then you've got the business. And it's just too much going on. I just like simple, you know, small stocks that can be multi baggers. They're more exciting. I like that. I like it.
Absolutely. So, what sort of exposure would you be looking at for each of those? Or are you not going to have such a rigid set?
I'll stick to with that 10%. But once I see opportunity, if it drops and nothing's changed, the story, like, for example, I'm prepared if Polarin dropped. What I'm up to at the moment, I did buy a few dips recently, and then I'm only up to about sort of 6-7% now.
Yeah,
I'd be happy if it got down, if it's dropped down to, like, you know, 17 pence or something like that. I'd be happy to get up to 20% in my portfolio, you know, and think it's gonna bounce anyway. And I may even delever before the actual payday comes out. But it's just knowing the risk. I'm about 5-6% down, I think. I'm around about the same as, you know. But I didn't buy, listen, with small cap stocks, you can buy at the wrong level, because when the upside is so massive, it's fine as long as you don't get too big on it. But I mean, avoid spikes, of course. But but where we are now, let's be honest, it's a 40 million market cap company. That's, you know,
right, sneezing.
Yeah. So plenty.
Okay.
So what? This is what I hope.
Just edit that out. Just edit that bit out.
Yeah, we'll edit that sneeze.
Can't be bothered.
Just leave it in silence to make the edit nice and easy.
So I've got, I literally got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stocks. Tristel, I've got Salt Lake Potash, I got Manolet, which I got wrong, Polarian, and I've got 2 others I'm not going to tell you about.
BT.
No, I haven't got that. Gone.
Got rid of it, BT.
Because they're small caps, and I want to build a stake in them. And
so you've got rid of, like, Barrett Developments?
Do you know why? I've been looking at the chart there. The trend's not in yet. I believe now. I think we're going to revisit. Maybe not the lows. I don't know. But I think we're going to have lots of volatility, and I just think they'll bounce along the floor for a while. They're not paying dividends, so what's the point of me having money in them? And BT, for example, I've been looking at the chart there. It's had a false breakout, so it's just having cash in there. And I think I don't want to have cash in there if it's not going anywhere. So if it gets above, and I put an alert there, if it gets above 130. And it finishes about 130. I think that's the trend going up. The trend has stopped going down, I think, for a while. It doesn't mean it can't revert to a downward trend. But for now, it's going sideways. But the trend isn't going up yet. So it could be sideways for a long time. And I think the market could go sideways for a long time. But with small cap stocks, it's different. You can, you know, in a recession, you can have a small cap stock that'll do very well. And I can see Salt Lake Potash doing very well. There's no way they'll start chucking out cash and then not do well. You know, so largely, you know, micro and small cap stocks are a story of their own. You know, they're not really tied.
And going back over old ground, but like I was saying the other week, United Oil and Gas and Asia Met. You know, I'm quite happy with my positions in there. But and see how that plays out over the coming months.
I'm
interested because there's still a lot of potential in both those companies. So
absolutely.
And that's far more exciting and interesting than than Barrett or Greg's or even the banks or whatever. So
I still, you know, put money every month into my fund, right? And that fund holds about 1,300 stocks. Can't get more diversified than that, you know? And that'll, and over time, that'll hit around 8 to 12, 10% a year. And you know, everyone should be doing that. And just in case, you know? And then I'm a mess around with the thing. So that's, at the moment, about 5% of my portfolio. But over the every, I'll keep doing that until I retire. And I'll just keep putting money into that. And every month, it automatically tops up. So that pays a little dividend. It's fine. That covers me on the big cap stocks. And it also, at the moment, I think it's about a couple of percent up, even after the drop we've just had, because I've been topping up regularly, and it's exposed to, like, 20% of it is American stocks. You know, NASDAQ stocks, like the big stocks, doing well at the moment. Amazon, all that stuff. So Microsoft. Yeah, so that's my big safe play. Really, I will have. I've got alerts on all these big companies we're looking at, but I don't want to sit there for ages and just get in the end of the day get 10% or 20% of it.
It's because we've said this before. Like, because you're involved in it all day, every day, and then inevitably you get bored, and you're looking at different things all the time. Whereas perhaps the rest of us,
resources.
But also, I'm prepared. Like I said, I want to free up the cash, as much cash as I got. Because if I have a big dip some days on some of these small cap stocks, the story engine, I'll just buy more of it. I'm quite confident in them. You know, I'll just buy more of them. Fine, I don't care. I just go nuts on it. Go berserk.
Yeah. You know? Basically, Justin's at the blackjack table. We're all playing the national lottery every week. That's my analogy on it. There we go. Thank you very much.
You're playing that. No, I'm at the blackjack. No, you are. I'd say you're playing bingo.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Right. Two fat ladies. Oh, they can't say that anymore. Fattest. That was about Jimmy Carr when he did some fat gags. Remember that? He came off stage. This is one of his gags. So I came off stage recently in Ipswich, and this lady came up to me, who's quite a big lady, and she said, "You are fattest." And he said, "No, you're the fattest." I'm just excited now. Our little dog, it's a tiny little thing, but a little frog came in my garden, right? A little frog came in my garden, and I just wanted to sniff it, see what it was like. Is it not on the patio?
Right.
And she sniffed it, and then all of a sudden the frog jumped. She jumped on top of the frog and put it in her mouth. She literally got the frog in her mouth, and I could not get it out. I got my finger, get it out. And literally, I forced her mouth open, and the frog just jumped out. And you imagine being that frog. There's nothing more dangerous, more scary, is it? There's a massive, you know, she's tiny compared to us, the dog, but massive compared to that. There's a tiny little frog, it's like the size of your thumb, pretty much, less than that. And, but imagine seeing jaws and teeth come around, and the darkness and light be wiped out, and all of a sudden just pitch black. You think, what the heck am I in? It's like,
you know, end of life.
Yeah. Wow, so you saved a life already this morning.
Yeah, so I shoved my finger in and forced the jaw open, and it just whoosh, jumped out as fast as it could. Light! But, it's exciting.
What were you expecting, the dog? That would be the dog.
I don't know, sometimes, because she's a bit jumpy. She's not like, sometimes she'll...
she's not a killer.
She'll go up to a leaf and she'll jump away from it, you know? She's a bit scared, but literally, with that frog, she sniffed it, it jumped, and all of a sudden she just leaped on it. Like, the killer instinct just kicked in, and... no, get it out! Because... And I read something, frogs are poisonous, apparently. Yeah, I don't know if it's those frogs.
I don't know about all. All frogs are bad names.
Anyway, anything else? Oh, by the way, do you know what? One more thing. Steve said a couple of weeks back about DPD, and it's the theme that's been explored before, Steve. And he said, I like DPD, and Paddy said, they're the best couriers. So can we invest in DPD? They're based in France. You can't, basically. They're a French company. So the French are doing better than British again, which is, you know. But
maybe... they listed in France.
I don't know, but they've been hiring. They've hired about 3,500 new drivers. I think 2,500 new back staffs. So altogether, 6,000 people they're hiring. Which they say, even in recessions, there are growth areas. You know, so when the market's turning down, there's always some part of the market doing well. There's always a little bull market in one sector. So there's always you can look around for opportunities. Like I said, some people have never done so well in some of these COVID stocks. Some of the traders on Twitter, they've never done so well. You know, and again, you've got things like Zoom, Skype, and all that team setting up. There's going to be offshoots of that happening. So you always got to look around thinking, okay, what's doing well? And that thing, Steve, that you said, it's One Up on Wall Street is a book by Peter Lynch, who's a very famous 90s New York fund manager, and he said, I get some of my ideas from my wife and her friends, because they start talking about stuff that I've never heard of, and they're all raving about it, and all of a sudden I realise it's part of a listed company, and I'll buy stock in it. So if it's a good feel for it, and people were talking about it. It's like, I remember a long time back, people were talking about Primark, you know, for ages, and loving it. And then really, the figures started coming through. Obviously, the figures are always delayed, but the feeling on the ground, on the street, you know, in the high streets, like Primark's the place to be. And then that, everything, you know, kept... what's it called? ABP. What they call something foods? What they called
Associated
Foods. Yeah, that kept them up, and their share price went up. They should always have spun that out. Always. Everyone said spin it out because it doesn't make any sense. It's a conglomerate, and literally it can't really perform because it's tied up with other companies not doing so well. But they should always spun that out. But things like that, you know, is knowing about stuff. Do you know, I never think, what's the point now, right, of ever going back to having normal meetings? Why do you ever feel the need to shake someone's sweaty hand or germ-ridden hand or give them a cuddle? I hate all that nonsense. It's nothing that can't be done on Skype, is it? It has to be done in person. Why fly across the world for a meeting for like a couple of hours, using up, you know, killing the environment, spending lots of money, especially people in a job, and then you're spreading germs and all that stuff, meeting up. And do you know what? If you are a CEO on going to do a deal across the world, if you go to someone, they give you good hospitality, drinks, take you out, that warps your perception, I think, of the company. Now, if you just look at the company
point of it.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What it's meant to be
exactly.
Doing.
But if you look at the company on the balance sheet alone, and then, okay, then that's as cold a light of day as you get. Now, if you go over and see, okay, they put you up, take you to a strip joint, all that stuff, you know, normal kind of things.
Have you been watching too many 1980s films?
Yeah. Then that would sway your perception in a positive way towards the company. Sign on dotted line when you're half hazy, you know, after 3 o'clock, come out of a club somewhere. I think things have changed massively, and I think, like I said, that trend of online shopping has been accelerated. I never ever want to go out shop anyway. Before this happened, why do I want to go to a supermarket? I hate supermarkets. I hate them.
I don't think. Yes, it has changed a bit, but a hell of a lot of this stuff is already going on. I mean, I have no data, but vast numbers of international business meetings and travel were being done, you know, remotely already. It's not a new thing. So that must have been a massive drop in the last 10 years of people not travelling around the world for meetings and all the rest of it. Likewise, supermarkets, online shopping, obviously has been massive in the last 10 years. So I don't see there's been, you know, absolutely massive kind of huge step change in everything. But obviously there has been a switch to 100% remote because nobody could travel. And I could see it being at a higher level going forward now, yes. But it's not like it's a brand new thing.
No, I know that. I know, but I just think there are some people who like meeting up with the people and they see... Well, I'm not a big fan of that, really, you know.
But increasingly, things have become more and more like this. Anyway, this is just accelerated to, like I say, 100% remote meetings.
Like, again, we got to try and look at trends that have changed, because there'll be companies coming out, listing, and I always, every week, I look at the IPOs, even though London Stock Exchange has changed their website. It's awful. I don't know what they've done to it. It's the old site was a bit old, but it's okay. London Stock Exchange has got a new site now. It's dreadful. Who would they get in to sort that out? It's all over the place. And I've had several people saying, what have they done with their site? But anyway, I check the IPOs every week and see. There'll be new companies coming out. It'll be, you know, they'll come up with a trend or something like that. And that's why I've got that filter. And I look at that filter all the time on my pre-revenue stocks. And if you look at the companies that have always done well, they've always, I fit the filter around that, of course, but they've always got certain things in common. And, you know, so one of them is the potential for a high, you know, big market. And if you look at Boohoo and JD Sports, they've got a big market there. You know, the demand can be quite big. So the end markets have got to be quite big, and they've got quite popular, like fashion for girls, all that stuff is always going to be big, isn't it? So whenever a company is coming out, can it be big? Is the end market big? You know, don't be having an end market. The app sounds good, high tech and nifty. That's a smart idea. But is the end market big? You know, it's got to be big. And anyway, that's what I'm saying. Okay. China, eh? God, China.
Right, okay, is it time to finish?
I just want to say, one thing here on China. Do you see that about Australia? Now they've had been attacks, cyber attacks from China happening all the time. And the guy didn't mention who it was, the Prime Minister. So we've been having increasing amount of attacks on the state government computers, all that. it's a state-sponsored attack, not saying who it is. Also, the fact that they are pushing for an investigation into where coronavirus started and that the Chinese have banned imports of their beef and all that stuff. And like as a lady who follows me on Twitter, and I follow her, said, I used to work for Sun Microsoft Systems or whatever, and we always had attacks. We knew where they were coming from, but we're not allowed to say it. It is from China. And I think, it's, do you know what? China at the moment, what I'm worried about, is they're saying only 36 people a day are being infected. If you looked at the average 10 top countries that have been affected by coronavirus, by death, and then looked, just took the average of the deaths per 1,000 population, China should have 500,000 deaths. They've only said 4,500. I don't believe China at all, do you? I think what's worrying is that, thankfully, this coronavirus, pretty much, if you're healthy, you're youngish, it's not going to affect you too much. But I just think I don't trust anything in China. Anything.
That's not going to help our listening figures in China.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Xi is a big fan of this. President Xi.
Is
she? Sits down there. So what I'm saying is now, you know, I don't know what I'm saying. But don't trust China.
Don't trust China and dogs eat frogs.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. On that, don't trust China is a thing. Paddy's left. He was so disgusted by that. He's left.
He's gone, Sir Pat. I think he's just annoyed because he doesn't get a mention in the the
Steve, can you make a jingle, Steve?
Yeah. Steve's gone as well.
No, I'm sorry, yeah. What do you mean? At the beginning, right, okay, yeah. Well, we don't hear that, do we, really?
No. Well, not if you listen back, no. But, can you just, if you listen to it, can you do one? You can do your own voice, can't you? Your voice is good enough, isn't
it? Well, it's not, I'm not the voiceover, though, so how does that work?
Okay.
Do it, put your voice in amongst them, so just split the one that's there.
And Paddy.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to sort that. Yeah, he's gone. He does have. He has some kind of bodybuilding class, hasn't he? In leotards.
Yeah.
The 1980s. Let's get physical. Yeah. You know, tanned up leotard. Yeah, he does that. So
he's there in his leg warmers and leotards doing the podcast.
He's already doing it. Sweating with his headband on. Let's get physical. Let's get some bodybuilding. Yeah. I remember once, last thing, right? But in school years ago, we used to have sort of evening classes, and there was a class for weight training, right? And what's his name? Mr. Sonson walked past. He's quite a strong rugby boy. And one of the boys, Carter, his name is Little Carter, and shouted at the window. He said, Mr. Sloan! Yes, Carter! Have we got bodybuilding today? He said, it's not bodybuilding, Carter, it's weightlifting! And he's really angry at it. Okay, sir. Yes, we have got weightlifting.
Semantics. But yeah, okay.
But
got
bodybuilding
it.
Is such a poser thing, isn't it? Bodybuilding. Yeah. It always makes me laugh when I'm doing bodybuilding. We got bodybuilding today. Not bodybuilding! It's weightlifting! Right, well then, anyway. You really get fed up with that. Steve, when's your last lockdown party, Steve?
There are. Two more, is it? Yeah, last one's on the 3rd of July, so only a couple more.
That's going to be a massive one, isn't it?
Well, what am I going to do? I don't know. It's just going to finish.
Well, if it wasn't for social distancing, you can get some kind of celebrity like Jay-Z or something like that, you know, but because of social distancing, you can't do that.
I can't, no, they can't. I got quite a small house, so obviously distancing is quite...
What about 8 from Steps?
I could probably arrange that, but again, it's just getting too close to him, you know, so...
Well, no, but by then it'll be all right, wouldn't it, the last one?
Yeah. I don't know.
Who knows where
in your bubble.
Yeah.
Your bubble.
Who knows where government policy will be then? You're probably saying hug everyone. Change their minds so often. Who knows? But there we are.
And the social distance will be down to 35 centimetres.
No, you'll have to touch people. You've got to spread it. So please touch as many people as you can and lick their faces and spread it as fast as you can. We need herd immunity. All right, boys. Be you next week.
Right. Thanks, then. Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.